Mr. Adam Steen, who is the candidate, gubernatorial candidate for the state of Iowa. Mr. Steen, good afternoon.
Hey, thank you for having me on. This is an honor to be here.
Nice to get to visit with you. How's the campaign going?
The campaign is going incredibly well. We jumped in about 9 months ago, and we're on a whirlwind tour right now. We got, 18, 19 days until June 2nd, and next week we're going to start a 25-city tour in 12 days. Whoa. I don't know how we're going to get it done, but we're all in, brother.
Wow. You are going at it here. So.
Yeah, all gas, no brakes.
I like it. Okay, so first, let's know a little bit about Adam Steen. Tell me about your family a little bit.
Yeah, so I got a wife, Casey, and two boys, Riker and Maverick. We live in Runnels, so 15 miles southeast of Des Moines. It's a town of about 400. We got a little acreage out there, chickens, goats, a dog, all kinds of random stuff, stealing birds out of our yard. Yeah. But my boys are amazing. They're 10 and 8. Riker, born with a rare genetic disorder. But he's a walking, talking miracle. Maverick does not have the syndrome. He's a little baseball player, got a little left-handed swing. And so we're excited for him. He's got all-star practice tonight. So we're a family of faith, hope, and grit, and we're all in on this campaign as well.
All right. So I like it. So we're going to get into the faith here in just a minute. But your previous role to this, I've heard you say on the trail when I knew that we were going to have the opportunity to visit, I've heard you say that you are ready to go. Yeah. You have experience with government. You've been involved in government. You know how it works. We just got off the air with retired Major General Chris Hughes, and we talked about that a little bit, about people knowing and understanding government. So why are you ready to go?
Yeah. So prior to joining into the governor's cabinet, I was 18 years as a business owner. So I was 18 years running companies, building companies, sold a company. And then the governor recruited me into her cabinet to oversee administrative services for the state. And that department, I didn't even know existed when I got the call.
What's administrative services?
So for 5 years, I oversaw state accounting, state human resources, state procurement, state major maintenance, state special projects, state investigations. All the ugliness of the operations of state government flowed through my department. And I had one heck of a team, and we did some great things for the state. We created efficiencies for the state. We did the alignment project for the state, which took 37 agencies to 16. We put all that together from an operational perspective and gave me direct line of sight into every single department in this state. And I know where more efficiencies can be gained. I know where more money can be saved. And I'm ready to operate the state on day one.
Yeah. And you still want to run.
Seeing all that, I'm still a sucker for punishment.
You still want to run. One thing you left out, you were drafted by the Phillies.
Yeah. 2002, I was on a small scholarship, Minnesota State Mankato, small baseball scholarship, and got a call on draft day, and they said, congratulations, you're part of the Phillies family. We drafted you in the 29th round as a pitcher. And so two seasons in, I realized that my fastball was akin to batting practice. The ball was going behind me a lot more than it was going behind the batter.
Uh-huh.
And so two seasons in, they called me into a back room and they said, hey, remember how you were part of the family? Well, you're not anymore. Here's your plane ticket back home. And so 2004, I moved back to Iowa and started my business career. It was an amazing experience. So
wow, how cool is that?
It was fun. It was fun.
Looks cool on a resume, though.
Yep. I leaned into that.
Yeah. So let's get into a couple of things. You recommitted your life to Christ at age 30. You mentioned faith.
Yep, 16 years ago.
You don't know this about me, and this is what I love. You have no idea where I'm coming from. And by the way, I will note, there's nothing on the table. You didn't say, I mean, this is, let's talk.
Yeah.
So tell me how important your faith is to you.
It's the most critical aspect of my life. I mean, I created a series of priorities 16 years ago. Number one is my faith. Number two is my family. Number three is my church. Number four is my country. And number five is business. And that's how I make decisions in those order, in that order. My faith always comes first. And when I recommitted my life to Christ 16 years ago, I was selfish. I wasn't living right. I was all about me. I wanted my kingdom to be big.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew I had a Jesus-sized hole in my heart. And so I hit my knees and I said, Lord, I'm done. I'm done living this way. I physically felt my heart change. And that moment put me on a whole new path, a whole new trajectory. I started praying for who I was supposed to marry, met my wife at a coffee shop. And we were married 8 months after that. And when Riker was born and he was diagnosed with his rare genetic disorder, we leaned on our faith, and specifically John chapter 9, where Jesus and the disciples are walking. They come across a man born blind. Mm-hmm. Disciples say, Lord, why was he born this way? Was it his sins or the sins of his parents? And Jesus said, neither. He was born this way so that God's works could be shown through him. And that was a pivotal moment in our lives. And so we've just gone all in on our faith. And Jesus is Lord. And I'm not afraid to share that and say that.
We need more people doing that, in my opinion.
We have to.
So when you are out on a 25 city stretch in 12 days or whatever that is,
yeah.
and you're tired,
yeah.
You got people beating you up a little bit because you're yeah. in a tough race.
Yeah.
A lot of people in the race too, by the way.
There's like a clown car running
yeah,
around.
I mean, you got, you know, so what do you, where do you go for strength in the Bible?
Yeah. Every day right now, I'm in the proverb of the day.
Yeah.
So I read the proverb of the day, and then I usually flip to the New Testament just to see what it turns to, and I read through it and I just pray for it. But every morning I literally wake up and I say, Holy Spirit, you got to work through me. And this has been a 9-month stretch so far, and we're not done yet. But if the Holy Spirit doesn't work through me and speak through me, I'm toast.
Yeah.
And so I'm just like, all right, Lord, let's go. And every moment, and I'm not supposed to say this, but I do get tired. There's times I'm tired.
It's just human.
It's part of the deal. But I get a mic, I get in front of a stage, and it's just like the energy comes back and I'm ready to go. And I don't need notes. I don't have to worry about what I say. Everything comes from my heart and experience.
So I'm going to show you a passage when we get finished here. I'm going to follow along with that. We're going to go to abortion.
Sure.
We're going to jump right into this.
Hell yeah.
So this is something that, I don't know if you look at some of the stuff online, there's some really twisted, dangerous interpretations of, well, really what salvation is in the Bible that you see on there, and abortion and life.
Yeah.
So I want you to know, where do you, because as governor, and since the states now have influence on abortion laws in their states,
thankfully,
that's a good thing in my opinion. Yeah. Where do you come down on abortion?
Yeah, so I'm life at conception. Now, with that, and I want to back up just a second. When Roe v. Wade was overturned, and it made it, and Trump's making it more of a states' rights issue. It needs to be a states' right and a federal issue. Like we need to, I believe we need to make sure that abortion is banned all across our country. Now, I do believe that there are moments and very rare occasions where we need to look at an exception to that. There are moments I believe that exceptions need to be made for life of the mother or some sort of situation like that. So I didn't used to be that way years ago, but I've pivoted slightly on that. But I'm a life at conception candidate. I think the heartbeat bill was fantastic, but we need to push that forward. And so that's my stance. That's what I'm sticking to. I will say this, and I'm not trying to make this political, but when we have a candidate on the opposite side of the aisle that's accepting money from Pritzker in Illinois, which has created a culture of death in Illinois, we cannot allow that type of culture to creep into Iowa. We need to promote a culture of life in Iowa. We need to create a culture of family.
Mm-hmm.
The birth rate across the country and the world's down. The state birth rate is down. We need to make families cool again. We need to make marriage cool again and having children cool again and spin it into a culture of life, limit the conversation about abortion by getting rid of abortion here in the state of Iowa. That's where I'm at on it.
So no bones about it.
No
life,
bones.
Life at conception.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Clear as can be.
Yeah.
How many genders are there?
There's two genders.
Okay.
Male, female.
Okay. Now we're getting somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Adam Steen with me running for the governor of our gubernatorial candidate for the state of Iowa. Have you had pushback on that?
No, you get these questions where people try to twist it and turn it, and you know, they bring up different subjects like IVF.
IVF is a tricky one for me. I'm not going to lie to you.
It's tricky. I will say this. I'm not going to go after IVF, and I've said that publicly. However, there's alternatives to IVF. Restorative reproductive medicine. It's called RRM, restorative reproductive medicine. It's a natural sort of newer medicine that allows your female's reproductive system to improve, to repair, to heal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the state has an amazing opportunity to plug that into our universities and start teaching RRM to doctors so that doctors can come here and give an alternative to IVF. I'll share this with you too. When Riker was born and was diagnosed with his syndrome, there's a 25% chance that any other child of ours is going to have Joubert syndrome.
Yeah.
And so, because it's genetic. So we went and talked to a doctor, and the first thing they said was, you shouldn't have any more kids. And it's like, well, time out. Like, what? So we went and moved on. They said, well, you can do pre-implant genetic screening on embryos to see if an egg is going to have Joubert syndrome. And my wife said, well, what do you do with the egg if it has Joubert syndrome? I said, well, we just discard it. And that struck us.
Mm-hmm.
It struck us. And we thought about Riker. Riker's the joy of our life. He's the coolest kid you'll ever meet. And the thought of discarding him,
right?
We're like, no, we're not going to do that. Now, others may make a like, it's just, it's a fine line there. But we chose life, and we chose to conceive naturally. And Maverick was born, does not have Joubert syndrome, which he and his brother are the best brothers you'll ever meet. And Maverick's learning how to take care of kids with special needs, you know, and it's transferring into school. So it's a dicey conversation, but I'm not going to go after IVF.
It's not an easy conversation. No. And that's why, and I can, I have to say on that one, I don't know. Like I said, yeah, with the question, it's a tricky one.
It's tough.
I don't know that I have a good answer for that, yeah, personally.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit again, Adam Steen with me. Let's talk about education savings. I want to shift a little bit here.
Yeah.
So you were on record as saying that you are not for income limits,
mm-hmm,
on in education savings account. Yep. I want to push back on you there, yeah, a little,
yeah,
bit. Why?
Yeah. Well, for starters, having met with several families that are currently using ESAs at independent, private, and Christian schools that have high income, they now are using more of their dollars to invest in their communities. If you create income limits, you're, I believe, unfairly punishing a family for having success. And I think that kind of flies in the face of free market capitalism. And what I've seen are families that now have the opportunity to use the ESAs of the money that they're spending anyway, that's going to follow their kid like it should. They're now able to give more. They're now able to donate more. And so that's just one area right there. But at its core, it's a free market play from my perspective.
So you would say, whatever income level,
yep,
that you're eligible for ESA, and,
yep,
and the, yeah.
Yeah, because the money follows the student.
Okay. Are you happy with the voucher, the ESA, or voucher, depending on which side of the aisle you're on,
yeah,
is the terminology there. But are you happy with the account? Can it made better, be made better?
I believe it can be made better. I believe we can expand it and allow the option for homeschoolers as well. I'm very happy with the school choice program, the ESA program. Other states right now are replicating that legislation and putting them into theirs because it has been extremely successful. I've been traveling this state, again, for 9 months, meeting with schools, privates, independents, Christian schools, and watching these kids learn in these classrooms, watching these schools expand has been unbelievable. It's a great economic boon for some of these areas as well, where now there's kids showing up in areas where their parents are going to a coffee shop down the road. I mean, there's other things that are spinning out of this that you don't think about. But I always want to make sure that I mention, I'm all for the school choice program, all for ESA. I'm not anti-public school, though. I need to be very clear on that. Our two boys go to public school. So they go to a public elementary school. Mm-hmm. We love our teachers. We love our school. What we don't love are the ridiculous standards and requirements that are being forced down upon these globalized, ridiculous DEI woke organizations, forcing teachers to follow their requirements and their standards that don't allow teachers to teach. And I'll give you one example of that. My son Riker, he operates differently than we do. His, yeah, syndrome doesn't allow him, his body to move as quickly as ours. We have to learn patience, mm-hmm, when we go places. He reads with 100% accuracy, 100% comprehension, but he doesn't read fluently. So he doesn't read fast. All the Common Core standards that are forced upon the teachers say that he has to read fast in order to pass his reading tests. So he gets zeros nonstop. And teachers with tears in their eyes will look at us and they'll say, this is how we're forced to grade your son. It's insanity and it shouldn't be happening.
So I visit with a school district every morning of the week, and some mornings, two school districts right here in Southwest, mm-hmm, Iowa, Country Sunshine Listening Area. So I talk to a lot of teachers, a lot of administrators that say, we can make those decisions better at our local school board level, so why bring those decisions back to Des Moines? Why not leave those decisions here with our local school boards and our local professionals instead of taking some of those decisions back to Des Moines?
depending on what decisions we're talking about there, what I want to provide as an option within the public school system is an opportunity for classical education to be taught in our public schools. You got, hey, you can pick Common Core, ridiculous woke ideology, or we can go classical education, which is phonic-based. It's critical thinking. It's physical books. It's actually teaching math, science, things like that. And you're not just trying to learn to get an answer right on the test. You're learning to think critically and solve actual problems. That's what a lot of these, if not almost all the private, independent, and Christian schools I visited, they're teaching classical education. These kids are thinking critically. They're asking tough. They ask me some of the toughest questions I've ever gotten on this campaign trail.
Yeah.
I don't want to punish public schools. I want to provide an opportunity for them to compete. And we need to do that by providing them the option to teach a different and better curriculum for their students. It'll change the culture and it'll change the curriculum. You will see improved scores and you'll see better behavior as well.
Iowa used to be at the top of the pile 30, 40, 35 years ago,
yep.
meaning number one, number two, number three. Now we're at the bottom.
Yep.
Will this help get us back?
Look at Mississippi. Okay. So short answer, yes.
Okay.
But as proof, look at Mississippi. Mississippi was 48th in the nation in education. They changed the culture and they changed the curriculum. Their culture now, parents show up at the schools as their kids go in for test days, and they line up and cheer for their kids as they're going in to take tests. It's changed the culture. The other thing they did, they changed the curriculum. They went classical education. So now they're teaching critical thinking. They're tricking everything I just mentioned. Mississippi, I believe, is now sixth in the nation. And I want to say it took them 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
Mississippi is a model that we used to do here in Iowa. So 100%, I believe this will put us back on top, and I believe we can become really a template for the rest of the country to follow.
Okay. Adam Steen with me. Now, you're going to be later today at 6?
6 o'clock.
O'clock, you're going to be in Essex.
Yes.
At the Opera House.
At the Opera House,
so
yeah.
people can go. It's open to everybody.
Open invite, open invitation.
All right. So would encourage people to stop by if they want to visit and talk,
Absolutely.
Learn more, ask questions,
yeah.
that sort of thing. So, property taxes. This
yeah.
has been kicked around a lot
mm-hmm.
for a long time. Are you happy with where we're at?
I'm happy with where we're at from the research I've done so far. So it's been maybe, call it a week and a half or so since the property tax bill was passed. I've been through the summary multiple times. I've talked to a few of the legislators that were involved in this. I've been saying since day one, regardless of what we do with property tax, the one thing I'm going to attack is government spending. Cities, counties, schools, and even the executive branch. We need to rein in government spending. The government spends too much money. I saw it from the inside. And I've been advocating for zero-based budgeting across the state, which doesn't allow you to take the same budget from last year, plug it in the next year, and just plus it up a couple percentage points. What this property tax bill has done, from my 30,000-foot view so far, is it's setting the stage for more accountability and more transparency on government spend.
Yeah.
Now, it's gonna cap the increase at 2%, but it's not gonna limit growth. And if you're going to increase at 2%, you gotta prove why you need that 2% increase. What I believe this does is this will incentivize cities, counties, and schools that haven't been transparent and accountable with their spend to actually get transparent and accountable. And this will also give an opportunity for voters to say, okay, I want to now know why we're actually going to increase. That it's created an opportunity for people to actually get informed and realize, hey, we may not have the right school board in place. We may not have the right city council in place because I want the free market and local control to reign. I don't want the state jumping in on that.
Because that is, I hear a lot talking to cities and city administrators and school boards that this is going to, bankrupt is the word that I hear a lot. This is going to bankrupt a lot of communities and counties.
Yeah.
Is that a fear of yours or no?
It's not a fear of mine because when you're faced with adversity, like, hey, we're going to cap you at 2%, it's going to force you to sharpen your pencil. It's also going to force you to prove why you're going to go bankrupt. I mean, there's several communities I've talked to that do zero-based budgeting already.
Yeah.
And so they're not alarmed at all because they know exactly where their spending's going. But they can then prove, okay, hey, I need this increase right here because I can prove it through the numbers, through line item budgeting. There are communities that probably should be a little bit nervous because they haven't taken the time To figure out why and where their money's actually going, and is it appropriate? Is this a necessary spend with inside of any government?
So you and again, Adam Steen with you, you've been involved in the government, state of Iowa in particular, mm-hmm. and you say you've seen it all, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Oh, yeah.
So here's my question to you. I'm a somewhat of a conservative person. I want to know where my tax dollars are going. Yep. I think there's there's a need and a place for government, but I want to know where my dollars are going, and I want to know that they're spent wisely. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I see over the last few years, we've been running near billion or billion-dollar deficits. I think that's irresponsible. How do you get out of that cycle, and what do we do to correct that? Because that's not sustainable, and that's not good for people.
It is not sustainable. However, one thing to look at is we were operating off of a very large surplus.
Yep.
So we had the Taxpayer Relief Fund. We had the Rainy Day Fund. And I believe, and maybe don't quote me on this, but it was about $9 billion surplus, which means we overcollected.
Yeah.
And as we lowered our income, so we lowered income tax, we lowered and got rid of retirement tax, we're lowering property tax. Obviously, as you lower your income, you better start figuring out how to lower your spend, which is why I've been flying the flag of let's look at spend now. Mm-hmm. Let's take a little pause. I want to continue to lower taxes, but in our homes and our businesses, we can't continue to lower income without lowering our expense. So you will see me on day one attack government spending and ensure that our tax dollars that are coming in are being used appropriately. Because I will tell you right now, the government has gotten too big. It's gotten too convoluted. It's gotten too complicated, and it comes out in waste, it comes out in fraud, and it comes out in abuse as well. So we have budgeted appropriately, but now it's time to start looking at the spend so we can level it out, create a balanced budget. So we've also got the surplus that's appropriate as well for the state.
You're going to have to get on the road here in a second, Mr. Steen, but I want to get to cancer rates.
Yep.
Cancer is what's talked about a lot. We have alarming cancer rates here in the state of Iowa. I think I know the reason, but what do we do to fix and correct what we have going on with our cancer rates?
Yeah, this is a very challenging conversation, but I've got a very, like most people in the state, I've got a personal connection to it. My father, who trained me up in business, he was my mentor. He passed away this July, will be 4 years, died of clear cell kidney cancer. It was environmental. We don't know what caused it. My mother just survived breast cancer about mm-hmm. a year ago. So this is near and dear to my heart. But we need the facts. We need independent data, independent research, so that we can make fact-based decisions. And what I've started to talk about on the campaign trail is in a Steen administration, the first thing I'm going to do is create a specific enterprise within my former department. My former department is that they're experts at project management, experts yeah. at solving problems. So we will create an enterprise within DAS. We will bring in experts, smart people, a lot smarter than me. We'll start with the Iowa Cancer Consortium, which is a conglomerate of 70 different organizations. We'll work with the University of Iowa, work with Unity Point. We'll bring in actual experts who've been researching these issues for many, many years. And then we're going to fund it appropriately so that we can figure out, one, what is causing the cancer, and two, how we're going to solve it. This will be a moon mission for the state of Iowa.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you what's going to come out of it. It's going to take a while. It's going to take time. But what will come out of it is innovation. Entrepreneurship will come out of this. It'll be public-private partnerships. We will find solutions to the cancer issue. We're going to prevent it. We're going to treat it. But we're going to start that immediately within the state.
I think it has to happen very quickly. And my opinion, along with many people, you know where I'm going with this, are because we spray the entire state of Iowa.
Yeah.
This is a big problem. There are solutions to it. There are examples in the EU of reformulation of those. Iowa is a big voice when it comes to agriculture.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is something that I think it has to be addressed, and I hope it's addressed quickly because it is. Yeah. I know people my age and some of my good friends that have dealt with cancer.
Yep.
I mean, I know many, many, many people that have dealt with cancer, and it's not right, and I think we know the reason, and I think it can be addressed in a meaningful way. And still, and I'm not bashing on anyone.
Yep.
This is an administrative and policy-driven agenda that has got us to where we are today with this, in my opinion.
I will say this, and I'll push back, just because we're having a conversation.
There you go right ahead.
No,
you
absolutely.
Push back.
No, no. Yeah. So I sat with a cancer doctor in Des Moines. He spent his whole life researching cancer. He will not vote for me. He's not a Republican. He's not going to donate. I spent 2 hours with him.
Steen's out.
Yeah, oh, yeah. No chance. There's no chance he's voting for me.
All right.
2 hours I spent with him, and I said, what do I need to know? What is going on? And he talked about processed foods. He talked about we spend too much time inside in radon. He said we spend too much time full of stress, not exercising. He said the foods that we're eating are creating competition within the biomes of our stomach that causes cancer cells to develop. He didn't mention farmers.
No.
He didn't mention spraying. And I said, where is this? And he said, look, it's such a broad spectrum, and it's such a – some people are genetically predisposed for cancer. So then – so now just one quick thing. So then the Iowa Cancer Consortium, hour and a half I spent with them on the phone. They invited all the gubernatorial candidates. I was the only Republican candidate to show up on that call. They talked about the entire thing. They never mentioned farmers. And I said, give me one stopgap. And they said, tell people to quit smoking and get your private wells tested.
So I agree. Again, hey, I'm the biggest. I love our farmers.
Yeah, yeah,
but they're working within a system that is here. But I'm saying policy-wise, administratively, we can make changes that everyone still wins. I'm not bashing on. Don't mistake
saying. Yeah.
But yes, radon. We have high rates of radon in Iowa, but we've had it since the last ice age.
And we've got the highest lung cancer rate in the country.
Yeah. Well, because we have radon.
Yeah.
But that's always been there. But our diet's terrible.
Horrible.
Other states are dealing with not radon like Iowa is necessarily, but poor diets.
Yeah.
Poor physical fitness. I mean, these are all things we know, but yet ours, look at our chart over the last 30 years, man, our cancer rates have just rocketed up.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
from an ag perspective, and I've mentioned this publicly too, I mean, we could look at buffer strips. We could look at timing of when we put phosphates on our fields. We could look at cover crop. We could look at all those things. All those things need to be explored. It all needs to be part of the conversation.
Yeah.
But what I try to advocate and share is that if you look at the data, if you look at the research, this is such a large, broad problem. If we focus it in just one area, we're going to miss the bigger picture, and we're actually not going to get to the treatment and prevention that we need.
And it is a real issue. And again, no one loves our farmers more than I do, man. We 100%. Have a bunch of great – I'll probably start getting texts from them here in a minute. I love them. I love our farmers, and they're disappearing far too fast.
100%.
We need more farmers coming along, and I don't know how we address that either.
Yep. Yep.
You're going to have to get on the road. I'm getting too long here.
No, this is good.
But
is good.
It is something that I – you know, it's concerning.
It is. It's a concerning. Huge concern. No, 100%. Well, and I just talked to a guy today, a potential donor, and he said, I want to know what your top three priorities are going to be should you become governor of Save Iowa. So my first one, I'm going to attack government spending. The second one, I'm going to go and incentivize skilled trades, construction trades, healthcare trades, and ag trades. And the third one is we're going to attack the cancer issue.
Yeah.
This is a top priority for me. We have to address this.
Absolutely.
We have to.
You don't know this, or maybe you do. Summit Carbon Solutions has just canceled their portion of the pipeline right here in Southwest Iowa.
Amen.
Not a fan of eminent domain at all, and I know that you're not either.
Hate it. Hate it. I think it's...
So would you address eminent domain?
I would, yes, bottom line. And I challenged the legislature this last session, solve it. Sign the bill with Senator Lawn's amendment on there that opens up the corridor, opens up for a different timing and negotiation, but says... eminent domain cannot be used for carbon sequestration. If we open that door, just bar the door, because it's going to be a problem.
Absolutely. All right, Mr. Steen, you got to go.
Thank you.
You will be in Essex at 6.
6 o'clock. Essex at the Opera House.
And you would invite people to come in and
anybody,
and
everybody, let's go.
Very good. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you. Thanks
for stopping by.
Thank
Appreciate
you. Appreciate
it. Adam
it.
Steen with me this afternoon. Again, how can they get in touch with you?
AdamSteen.com. Adam, S-T-E-E-N, AdamSteen.com.
Very good. Check him out. I think you'll like him. June 2nd.
June 2nd.
June 2nd is a primary, so it's a crowded field. We'll see what happens. So, thanks for stopping by. Make it a great day, Mr.
Thank
Steen.
You.